Philip II of Macedonia, the defeat of Phocis. The Macedonian army was in Thessaly, no more than a couple of days' march from Thermopylae. Philip's intentions remained unclear, although there was talk, which he surely encouraged, hinting that the punishment for looting the sacred funds of Delphi could fall on those responsible, and not all, on the Phocians. He suggested milder treatment than many of the other members of the Amphitryonic Council, who had declared the second sacred war in the first place, that they were demanding, but could be imposed by Philip, especially if he was directly supported by Athens and Spartan troops. Philip reached the approaches to Thermopylae and halted. At Athens, the assembly listened to their ambassadors, and then, encouraged by their reports of Philip's promise of goodwill and future benefits, once again confirmed the alliance. The ambassadors were sent to the king for the third time to inform him of this, although this time Demosthenes declined to go and was beginning to criticize Philip once again. Asinus pleaded ill health so that he could stay in Athens and answer any claims made by the other man. Before the ambassadors reached Philip, they dispatched envoys of his own requesting that the Athenians send a force to assist in the settlement of Phocis. Demosthenes argued against it, saying that these citizens would simply become more hostages, like the captives from Olynthus, and plenty of Athenians believed him. Asinus failed to persuade the assembly otherwise, and the request was refused. Now, this news was a disappointment, although it's arguable how far it altered Philip's plans. But he now had clearly done a deal with the Phocian commander, who was allowed to depart and take his 8,000 mercenaries with him. The Macedonians marched through Thermopylae unopposed and occupied Phocis, where Philip summoned the meeting of the Amphitryonic Council to decide what punishment to inflict. There was talk of executing all the males, but it was obvious that Philip had no intentions of doing anything so brutal and had most likely made the agreement with the general on that basis. Phocis and all its cities were demolished, except for a single community that had opposed the occupation of Delphi. All weapons were ritually destroyed, all horses were sold, and the Phocians were banned from obtaining replacements in the foreseeable future. The population was settled in new villages too small and undefended ever to become polises, and a large sum was to be paid back to Delphi each year until the amount stolen had been replaced. Given the wanton cruelty of the victors in Greek warfare, let alone in the context of a sacred war, this was mild treatment, although we should never downplay the severity of political extinction to a Greek. Theban and Macedonian garrisons were established in Phocis to ensure that the terms were enforced. Philip had avenged the insult to Apollo, and the prestige this earned him in many Greek cities should not be blurred by hostile Athenian opinion. He was given, or more likely in a strict sense, the Macedonians were given Phocis' two votes on the Amphitryonic Council and the Athenian priority for consulting the oracle at Delphi. Shortly afterwards, he was honored by the appointment to oversee the Pythian Games in the autumn. The festival had not been held since the beginning of the Sacred War. A sulking Athens refused to take part, complaining that the treatment of Phocis was cruel and feeling that Athens itself was not being held in sufficient respect, given that neither she nor Sparta, as the Phocians' two greatest allies, suffered any real punishment. This is unrealistic, as it was predictable. Demosthenes and others raised fears of an imminent Macedonian invasion, and there was certainly little to stop Philip if he chose to march against the city. He did not, and although the Athenians did not attend the games, they did vote as members of the Amphitryonic Council to approve all of its decisions. We do not know how large a force Philip led in the Phocis, and whether he had the strength to besiege a large city as Athens, which was easily supplied from the sea. Such a move, or intervention in the Peloponnesus, risked alienating the goodwill he had gained, and perhaps even persuade other Greeks that Macedonia was a real threat and needed to be fought. Athens was not the center of Philip's world, and the following years demonstrate that he felt he had a lot of work to do on his northern and eastern borders. The Macedonian army had plenty of enemies without starting a major war. Some scholars have taken seriously the rumors about his hostility to Thebes and claim that he did plan the move against the Thebans, only to be thwarted by a lack of support from Athens and others, and by the mustering of the Boeotians. None of this makes sense, for any Athenian contribution was bound to be of minor importance. Attacking Thebes and its allies, even by surprise, was unlikely to produce a quick victory. for wars in Greece tended to last a long time, and victors soon became feared, prompting others to turn against them. Ending the Sacred War was neat and simple by comparison, allowing Philip to turn to other matters. There is no doubt that Philip's conduct through 346 BCE was calculated, self-interested, and sometimes devious. In other words, just like all the other participants, he had manipulated events, delayed when it suited him, spread rumors and vague promises. All this was made easier because his hands were so strong in the first place, for his military force was likely to be decisive unless Athens and Sparta gave effective support to Phocis. He was lucky as well as skillful, for the internal struggles amongst the Phocians eventually opened the path at Thermopylae. Victory was bloodless, Apollo avenged, and the king of the barbarians, Macedonia, now a leading member of an organization at the heart of Greek culture. He had also secured Thessalian aims of capturing Halys and given to its leaders of Pharsalus, who promptly enslaved the entire population. The garrisons in Phocis served the double purpose. For as long as his Theban alliance remained sound, and then the route to southern Greece would be open to his army whenever it was needed. Since he had ensured that the Thebans had achieved much of what they wanted, notably removing fortifications from three Boeotian communities that had more or less willingly joined the Phocians, such goodwill was really likely. Athenians could and did speak ever more loudly of the threat he posed to them, but at least from now on he did so fully aware that their city was not beyond his reach. Philip was not yet 40, so the scale of his success in 346 BCE should not be downplayed in expectation of his latter more complete domination of Greece and then the attack on Persia. We cannot know how far ahead Philip planned or how fixed his ideas were, but he was still young, more successful than any earlier Macedonian king, and about as secure as any Argive could be and able to work with his own timetable. So now we're going to move on and deal with Alexander here eventually at some point. So now the sources for this, the Politics by Aristotle, the Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and the Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.